I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's August 15th, and we have a lot to talk about. Rehabilitation is an intervention that's designed to fix whatever it is that might need fixing. It's a reaction to something that's been lost or at least changed. Now, in the case of MS, that might be balance, mobility, cognition. I'm sure you get the idea. But today, we're focusing on a concept that may not be as familiar to you, and that's prehabilitation, a proactive approach to maintaining your mobility and independence longer. And returning to the podcast once again, this time to discuss the value and benefits of prehabilitation, is the National MS Society's Associate Vice President for Research, Dr. Kathy Zukowski. But before we get to my conversation with Dr. Zukowski, there are a few other things that you should know about. First, a quick reminder from my friends and listeners in Canada. The 15th annual Burgers to Beat MS Day is taking place in just 2 days on August 17th at A&W locations across Canada. For those of you living in Canada or those of you with plans to be in Canada this Thursday, A&W will donate $2 for every teen burger sold to support the work of MS Canada. Canada has one of the highest rates of MS in the world, and every day, 12 more Canadians are told you have MS. Over the past 14 years, A&W has raised over $19 million to support research, programs, and services for Canadians living with MS. This year's fundraising goal is $2 million. And if you'd like to participate, but you don't want to wait until Thursday, or you don't happen to live in Canada, you can visit burgerstobeatms.ca and make your online donation today. And you'll find that link in today's show notes. If you're a regular listener, you know that I'm always excited to introduce you to people who I consider to be difference makers. And today, we're going to meet Matt Nags. Matt was diagnosed with MS in 2020. But in a relatively short amount of time, Matt has literally covered a lot of ground. In a moment, we'll meet Matt Nags. Matt Nags was diagnosed with MS in March of 2020. And by July of 2020, Matt launched a Facebook group called Running with MS. Just a little more than a month ago, Matt completed running an ultra marathon. Welcome to the podcast, Matt.
Thanks, John. I'm really excited to be here.
I know a marathon is just a bit more than 26 miles. What was the distance of your ultra marathon?
The ultra marathon that I did was based on running as far as you possibly can within a specified period of time. So I did a 12-hour ultra marathon, and in that time, I ran 44.3 miles.
What was that like?
It was incredible. Exhausting, as you can imagine. There weren't that many people crazy enough to take on that challenge. There were about 30 other participants in that particular ultra marathon. It was rainy and muddy, so it was actually quite dangerous at times as well. But it was super exciting. For me, as someone who, right before getting diagnosed, had almost resigned myself to, well, I guess I'm never going to be active again. My life is, you know, going to be completely different, to then 3 years later be in the position to say, I just ran 44 miles and am looking to do even more. It was an incredible feeling, a feeling that, you know, really helped me to convince myself that we truly are capable of incredible things.
How do you go about training for an ultra marathon?
As you can imagine, a lot of running, but what a lot of people are often surprised to hear is much more than running, there's also a component of strength training. If you're not training the other areas of your body that really propel you throughout a race of that length of time, you're really prone to injury. If you're running, you know, 5 miles, maybe strength training, you can probably get away with not doing a whole lot of, but to really prevent injury, strength training is key. So I would do 3 days of strength work for my legs per week, in addition to running usually 6 days a week. And that's not just distance running, but it's also hill running, speed training as well. Even though you're not trying to go for speed in an ultra marathon, doing speed training also helps with your physical fitness overall.
You know, I've heard people say that all battles are won or lost before they're ever fought. So I have to ask you, what about the mental aspect of preparing yourself for something like this?
So a lot of people already told me I was crazy for trying to take on a challenge like this, because part of this 12-hour race was that it's on a 3-mile loop. So people would say to me, Matt, you're crazy. You're going to run in circles over and over and see the same thing over and over for 12 straight hours. That's mentally exhausting. And part of my training was to be bored while running. So I would run the exact same route on a lot of my long runs in my neighborhood, where it would be roughly a 3-mile loop of the same thing over and over. And my neighbors look at me like I'm crazy. This guy's out there running for 3 hours at a time, the same place over and over again. So there is definitely a mental aspect of it. And, you know, aside from actually practicing that while running, there's also a component of really being your own best cheerleader and encourager of yourself, to say to yourself that despite what you're feeling or despite how challenging the situation is, saying to yourself, I can do this. I've got this. Yes, this is painful. Yes, this is exhausting, and I'm going to do it. And so just being your own positive influence in that situation is really helpful.
Well, I think I want to circle back to that in a moment. But now that we've sort of addressed this remarkable accomplishment, let's turn the calendar back to 2020. What were the circumstances that led to your MS diagnosis?
So before I was diagnosed, I had been trying to figure out what was going on for quite some time. As I understand, it was actually a quick path to diagnosis, in that it only took 9 months in my case. My MS flare at the time was triggered by grief, the unexpected passing of my father. And as I had gone to my doctor explaining the symptoms I was experiencing, my doctor kept on telling me, it's from the grief, you know, just try and manage your stress and you're going to be fine. And eventually I got to the point of saying, I really don't think that when I look down and feel electrical current pulsing through my body, which you know as Lermit's sign, that is something that could happen from grief. And ultimately, I wound up in a hospital while I was traveling for work out of town. And based on the symptoms I had, they agreed to admit me so a neurologist could see me. And after a week visit in the hospital, I was diagnosed with MS.
What went through your mind at that point?
So many things. There was affirmation that I wasn't crazy, that it wasn't all in my head. There was this fear of the unknown. Admittedly, there was a short period where I was depressed also of, wow, I had all these ideas for what my life is going to look like. And MS has come to change that. And, you know, I'm fortunate in that I was able to overcome those preconceived notions that even I had, to say, wait a minute, why am I letting my potential future be overridden by my current path? Everything that I had heard about MS was often the worst case scenarios. And at first I started acting as though the worst case scenario is me. It's where I am right now. People with MS don't exercise. They don't run. So I started to kind of give up, so to speak. And I'm very thankful that something kind of lit a switch. That doesn't make sense, but flipped a switch in my mind, saying, wait a minute, you're not to that point yet. You're not so far along. with disease progression that you have to stop doing things. So instead, I shifted to say, what can I do? And let me see how much more I can do. Before my diagnosis, I had never even run more than a half marathon. And since being diagnosed, I've run 5 full marathons. I've done longer than marathon distance multiple times, including the recent ultra that you've mentioned as well. And I've got even bigger things planned also. So part of what I'm all about is trying to show other people that despite our diagnosis, there's a lot we still can do. And I think it's somewhat natural to receive a diagnosis and say, things in my life have changed. That's absolutely true. They have. But we don't have to decide that everything has changed for the worse quite yet. We can see what we're still capable of and what we can do with what we've got.
3 or 4 months after your diagnosis, you decided to launch your Facebook group, Running with MS. You know, there are a lot of groups on social media for someone who's living with MS to join. What motivated you to start Running with MS?
When I was newly diagnosed, I was looking for any kind of support that was out there. And a lot of the groups I found were mostly encouraging and mostly positive, but pretty much all of them had at least one aspect of it that made me uncomfortable. Anytime I would see discouraging and depressing posts, my heart absolutely would go out to those people. I also had to protect myself, where I know that it's easy for me to go to a dark place if I see what the potential future looks like and to go down that rabbit hole. So I said, you know, I'd really like to start a group where the whole premise of the group is this is a completely positive and optimistic place. And it doesn't mean that the group cannot share challenges that we have to say, here's the thing that is, you know, really challenging me right now. I'm having these symptoms and these things are happening in my life. We all have that, and it's healthy to talk about that. What I wanted to make sure that we had within this group was that aspect of, in spite of these challenges, I know that I'm going to figure it out. I know that it's going to be okay, that we're in this together. And I've been so pleased and humbled by what the group has become. Honestly, there are so many incredible, inspirational people who have truly embraced this concept of, this is all positive. And by the way, it's not for everyone. There are some people who say, I can't take that much optimism. I can't take that much positivity. And that's really okay. We've structured the group to where even before entering, you have to agree to understanding these are the rules. And, you know, if you do have challenges and you're not sure how to be positive in talking about them, then there are group members, myself included, who will reach out one-on-one to provide that support. So that way, the group still publicly to its group members is always a place where when you show up on the page, you're not going to see something that makes you think about the negative potential in your future, but instead that's always focused on what we are still able to do and what we are still working on to do incredible things today.
So who can join Running with MS and how do they join?
Anyone can join Running with MS. It's not required that you have MS to join. So it's really open to anyone who has MS. We also welcome caregivers, partners, spouses of people with MS, loved ones, supporters of people with MS. Or the way I also put it is just if you want to come into a group and be inspired by a bunch of incredible people, then that's the main criteria. So as long as you're willing to abide by the rules of maintaining optimism at all times, then anyone's welcome.
So full disclosure to our listeners, I am a member of this group, and I can personally attest to the fact that every time you visit the page, it's going to be inspiring, it's going to be motivating. And if you are of that mind, I can't imagine a better social media destination for you. Let me ask you, Matt, what have you learned as a result of living with MS?
I've learned a lot of things. One is to prioritize what matters most to us. I often talk about making sure that you find your why. And for me, my why is being the best dad and husband I can in my family at all times. And a big part of that is not giving up just because MS has thrown a new challenge at me, and prioritizing my health, my sleep, my stress management, all of those things, my diet as well, they all lead to me following that why, in the reason that I am working so hard at all times to be that role to my loved ones. So learning to prioritize becomes a whole lot more important when you're faced with a challenge, and it also becomes a whole lot easier when you know why you're prioritizing the things you're prioritizing. If they're deeply meaningful reasons, then it'll be much easier to continue the course.
When we were talking about how you prepared for your ultramarathon, you mentioned being your own best cheerleader. How do you think that mindset has served you in your MS journey?
Living with MS, it can feel overwhelming. And everyone has their days, even if you go on social media and see this person, they've got it so great, right? It's a lot of times you see just when things are going well. So even when I have my days, I would say that knowing that if I tell myself positive and encouraging things, I've seen by my own experience how that gets me through difficult times. I've seen it when I'm racing and doing, you know, the athletic feats that I attempt to do. And I've also seen it when I'm struggling on a particularly difficult day when it comes to dealing with my MS symptoms. And I see where having that mindset helps me overcome difficult areas that, if not for that mindset, I might get stuck in a rut. It's worth trying. When you start doing it, if it's new to you, you might say, this is ridiculous. Who talks to themselves and says, you can do this? But you're the only one that's going to know you're doing it, right? You say it in your head. So go ahead and feel silly doing it. Try it. I'd encourage you to do it and just see what happens. If you don't like it, well, then you don't have to tell anyone that you tried it.
Now that you've completed an ultramarathon, you've alluded that bigger plans lie ahead. What's next, Matt?
So my bucket list run as of right now is a relay race that I believe you may have heard of, John. It's called MS Run the US. And this relay race selects 19 runners to run a segment across the US, starting in California and ending in New York. As a matter of fact, as of the time of this recording, I'm actually in the interview process to see if I will be one of the runners in next year's relay. So if I were to be selected, I would be running a segment that is likely 6 days of running about 31 miles per day. So 6 days in a row of 31 miles per day. So that's my big bucket list challenge as of right now.
I'm doing the math. That's running just over 180 miles in slightly less than a week.
Yes.
That's... I'm out of words, and that doesn't happen very often. But I wish you the best of luck in going through the selection process. If it turns out that you are going to be one of those runners, I hope we can circle back and you can be our special Real Talk MS correspondent during the race.
That would be incredible, John. I'd love that.
All right, we'll keep talking about that. Matt Nags, thanks for leading by example and choosing to live your very best life in spite of MS. And thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thanks, John. Can't thank you enough for all you do for the MS community and being that guiding voice for so many of us throughout our journeys also.
Running an ultramarathon like Matt may not be one of your goals. Maybe you're hoping to just get through your everyday activities, whatever they may be, without your MS symptoms getting in the way. Achieving that kind of goal might include working with a physical therapist, an occupational therapist, a speech pathologist, or another rehabilitation specialist. But you might have a slightly different goal, and that's to proactively prepare yourself for overcoming some of the obstacles you might face in your everyday activities before your MS symptoms get in the way. And that's what prehabilitation is all about. Joining me in a moment to walk us through the hows and whys of prehabilitation is the Associate Vice President for Research at the National MS Society, Dr. Kathy Zukowski. Although rehabilitation therapy can open the door to living your best life with MS, rehabilitation often gets overlooked and ends up being underutilized until someone's mobility has already been impacted by their disease course. The National MS Society's Associate Vice President for Research, Dr. Kathy Zukowski, is joining me to talk about how prehabilitation, as well as rehabilitation, could be solutions for many people with MS to maintain their independence and their mobility longer. Dr. Zukowski is also an adjunct associate professor at the Kennedy Krieger Institute and Johns Hopkins University Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation, as well as an occupational therapist with a tremendous amount of experience working with people living with MS. Welcome back to the podcast, Dr. Zukowski.
Thank you, John. It's great to be back.
You know, I love talking with you because you always have insights and strategies that can help people living with MS improve their overall quality of life. And that's no small thing. So I'm glad you're always willing to come back and share new information. Today, you're not only bearing new information, we have a new word, prehabilitation. And I want to get to that new word in a minute. But first, I know you recently attended a conference that included a presentation about the research outcomes of functional recovery or rehabilitation in the MS population. You know how much we love talking about the evidence that research provides. Can you tell us about the research that you heard about?
Yeah, I'd love to. So I think you're referring to the Global MS Summit that the Society had in May. And Dr. Lars Vid from Denmark had a few important points I'd like to bring up. So first of all, he emphasized the importance of adding exercise, physical activity, cognitive rehabilitation, and wellness interventions as early as possible to improve impairments and overall function for people with MS. But he also highlighted the need for research and specific details for the researchers, like having properly powered studies, meaning they're large enough to answer or address a specific hypothesis. Make sure that those studies enroll people who actually have impairments relevant to what they're studying, which sounds obvious, but isn't always the case. And to embrace the complexity. In other words, a person's function is not simply a result of strength or cognition or motivation. It's all of these, and thus requires a multidisciplinary approach. He also brought attention to symptoms that often are overlooked, like bladder and bowel function or swallowing and speech, and that these are important to people and we need to study them. He also encouraged the idea of combining behavioral rehabilitation approaches together. So for example, an exercise approach as well as cognitive rehabilitation, if you put them together, can you get different results? Or even combining a pharmacologic approach with a behavioral approach like cognitive rehab or exercise, for example. So I thought all of those things were pretty relevant and important to improving functional recovery for people with MS.
Before we get too far along in our conversation, I want to make sure I have my terminology right. So I'm hoping you'll explain the difference between rehabilitation, physical therapy, and general exercise.
Sure. So rehabilitation is a kind of an umbrella term. So it's an active process in which you and your team work together to identify and execute a plan to strengthen and maintain your ability to do activities that are important to you, whether that's at home, at work, at school, or in the community. And the goal of rehabilitation is to help you do those activities you want to do despite having MS. You might need rehabilitation throughout your life, and it may look different depending on the type of MS you have and the symptoms you're experiencing. Now, physical therapy is a branch of rehabilitation, And a physical therapist will help you address your body's ability to move and function, with particular emphasis on walking, strength, balance, posture, fatigue, and even pain. So physical therapy might include an exercise program, or it may include specific training that you can do to improve your walking, or even how to use mobility aids like a cane or a crutch the right way. Now, exercise is different. So exercise is a form of leisure activity that we perform repeatedly over an extended period of time with a specific external objective. So I want to walk 20 minutes at this speed. That's exercise, right? I want to do a certain number of repetitions, three times a week. Now, exercise is associated with physical therapy, right? Because a physical therapist can give you an exercise prescription. But we all do exercise without a physical therapist in real life, too. It's just not as precise it's not prescribed quite the same. So all of the rehabilitation, physical therapy, and exercise are all related, but they do have very distinct definitions that I think might help us use them most appropriately.
So now let's get to that new word. What's the difference between prehabilitation and rehabilitation?
Right. Okay. So rehabilitation is more familiar, right? It's this intermittent or ongoing use of interdisciplinary strategies to regain or maintain optimal physical function, to promote functional independence, to prevent complications, and to overall improve your quality of life. Just as all parts of your life are often affected by MS, all parts of your life can be affected and improved by rehabilitation. So the goal of rehab is to help you do the activities you want, despite having MS. Now, prehabilitation is a little different. It's focused on improving an individual's functional capacity before a stressor. So in this case, it might be that the stressor is an MS diagnosis, or a relapse could be a stressor. And the goal of prehabilitation is then to work toward the best possible function now, so that impairments that follow start even from a higher level. So one example that I think of is this idea of cognitive reserve. So the cognitive reserve hypothesis is that engagement in higher levels of intellectual enrichment, meaning games that you use to think, cognitive games, can minimize the impact of MS-related neural damage on cognitive functioning. And data suggests that people with MS who have higher cognitive reserve demonstrate relatively preserved functional connectivity, despite the accumulation of atrophy in the brain. So cognitive reserve is one way that prehabilitation might be able to improve that. There are also a lot of other interventions in a prehabilitation program that include things like physical activity and a healthy diet. We know that eating a balanced diet can improve quality of life in people with MS. And the focus on personalizing the program to an individual's specific needs can promote individual empowerment. So it's important to get exercise, have a good diet, but even knowing that you're doing something for yourself that can make a difference has a lot of power and can be very influential. So definitely we need more data to determine the full benefits of prehabilitation, but those studies are ongoing and there will be answers, more specific answers soon.
You know, you've already started answering my next question. The National MS Society points out that more than half of all the people living with MS may develop some problem with cognition. And I'm wondering, and again, you already started answering this, whether there's a prehabilitation and rehabilitation for cognitive issues, and does that differ from prehabilitation or rehabilitation that's focused on improving physical function?
So there are studies that are examining how effective cognitive rehab is in MS. And even over the more recent years, there are definitely several really effective programs that can improve cognition for people with MS. So one example is the Kessler Foundation's Story Memory Technique. This is a memory retraining protocol where participants are taught to facilitate new learning by utilizing context and imagery. So it relies on connecting images in a way that is engaging and memorable to you, And it's shown to be very effective, and it can be worked on virtually. Another example might be group-based community programs that teach strategies that help you just manage the cognitive changes that you're experiencing with MS. Now, in terms of exercise or physical activity, we know that even a single bout of exercise can impact cognition for people with MS. And overall, the studies that have been published, even for the last 8 years, support the idea that exercise has a positive impact on cognition in the MS population. And in particular, these studies have reported that exercise training that incorporates a wide variety of interventions. So not doing the same repetitions each day, but mixing it up a little bit, doing a little bit of repetitions with your legs or moving it to your arms or your trunk or doing a little bit of walking or reaching with your arms. Mixing it up a little bit has been shown to have the most benefits in terms of changes that you might see in cognition. So research on exercise training is a very promising approach for improving cognition. And this research has been growing, but we still don't have definitive answers, like exactly what should person A do versus person B in terms of the type of exercise that would be most impactful for their cognition. Those answers aren't here yet, but researchers are trying to sleuth that out and investigate that now.
So if someone living with MS is hoping to find a healthcare professional in the field of prehabilitation or rehabilitation, what types of specialists should they be looking for?
So MS rehabilitation, I keep saying this word, kind of multidisciplinary or interdisciplinary team approach, but it's really important because just as your neurologist is a trained professional that can take care of your medical needs as a person with MS, your rehabilitation team is trained specifically to address other areas of your care. So, for example, a physical therapist is trained to understand exercise prescription, for example, or what tools you need to improve your walking or your strength. An occupational therapist is trained to teach you how to adapt activities. So something that might be impossible for you now since you've been diagnosed with your MS, now we can break it apart and put it back together so that you can still accomplish that goal, but it might take a different form. Occupational therapists are also very good at helping you figure out how to make your home safe or keep your home safe as you change. Speech therapist is another part of the rehabilitation team. They're really good at understanding thinking skills and speaking skills and swallowing issues. But those are the most obvious. There are others that I feel like I should mention, like a social worker. Social worker is critical to determining what resources you might have in your area to help you. A psychologist or neuropsychologist. These are professionals that really help you deal with mental health issues and challenges like depression or anxiety in the midst of your MS. There's also an orthotist. This is a person who helps build tools adapt tools that will fit you and allow you to stay as functional as you are. Or a urologist. This is a medical physician who is trained on how to address bowel and bladder issues. So there are a lot of individuals in addition to your primary care physician and your neurologist that can really speak to this idea of prehabilitation or rehabilitation.
Let's talk about someone who's been living with relapsing remitting MS for 10 years or so. They're on a disease modifying therapy. They try to live a healthy lifestyle and they feel that their MS is generally well managed. Are they still a good candidate for prehabilitation?
Yeah, it's a really good question, right? I mean, we're all busy and it's hard to imagine that it's worth the effort, right, to go find these rehabilitation or prehabilitation specialists. But remember that prehabilitation, the goal is to optimize your health and function now in preparation for what might come next. So since we don't know what's coming next, establishing a baseline with a rehabilitation provider offers an opportunity. It offers the opportunity to pick up small changes that might not be initially noticed by a person, but if you can address them early on, it might make them easier to adjust or fix. So for example, you may notice that, you lose your balance a little bit more than usual. Now that could be normal aging. It could be that you know, you've never fallen, but you catch yourself a little bit more on the furniture or walls at home, but it doesn't really bother you because nothing really bad has happened yet. So a baseline evaluation with, say, a physical therapist in this case may show subtle changes in sensation that puts you at higher risk of falling. And, you know, once you fall, you're at risk of breaking a bone or hurting your head. But if you can notice these, or a physical therapist can share that there's these changes that might be very subtle, you might be able to address them more directly. There might be things you can do to put your risk of falling lower so that you don't put yourself in that position. So prehabilitation services start with an evaluation to determine what areas need work. So it's definitely an experience where you come to that rehab provider with questions you might have, but they also evaluate you in a way that you might not even be aware that there are some issues you could.
Telehealth has fundamentally changed the practice of medicine. It certainly made healthcare more accessible to people who may be living with more advanced mobility issues. Has telehealth also impacted the way rehabilitation services can be delivered?
Yes, absolutely. I would say this is one benefit, if there is a benefit of COVID, might be this advancement of telemedicine. So the use of virtual medical evaluations are much more common now and offer people the opportunity to benefit from services that might not have been available simply because of their geographic location, or because it's just really hard to get someone to drive you somewhere, or the effort it takes to get into a car and get yourself to a large medical facility. I would encourage you to ask questions and reach out to rehabilitation providers and ask if they have the potential to do a virtual evaluation or virtual treatment are a possibility. And if you don't know where to start, you can ask your neurologist and ask them, who would you recommend for rehabilitation, and do they offer any kind of virtual service?
You know, I'm so interested in this paradigm of proactively getting an evaluation, a prehabilitation evaluation from a specialist who may very well see things that other people are going to miss in their own lives. But I'm wondering, how does private insurance look at prehabilitation? Are these kinds of services typically covered, or are there some extra steps someone might have to take?
Yeah, that is the million-dollar question, right? So there's one thing to be motivated to get the prehabilitation you might need, but there's the other of how do you pay for that? So the answer is not simple. My first recommendation would be to reach out to the MS Navigators. They are there to ask questions and find out, for your particular situation, what does your insurance provide? What services does your insurance provide? Most insurance in the United States will cover a number of sessions from a physical therapist, an occupational therapist, and mostly a speech therapist. But often it's in a limited way. So there might be a certain number of sessions you get per year, and that would be important to know. It also might involve a copay. So it might not cover all of the expense, but covers a certain percentage. And so understanding those limitations can help you plan how best to utilize the services that your insurance does offer you. But it's not an easy answer because it is so individualized based on the type of insurance you have and even the state that you live in, for example.
I will go ahead and include all of the contact information for the MS Navigator program in today's show notes. Dr. Kathy Zukowski, I learn something new every time we talk. Thank you for all you do to improve the lives of people living with MS. And thanks for talking with me today.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/311. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.